It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, hey, what you doing, closet busters? You know what it is. It's time once again to stop your closet dwelling, to step out, to step up, and to step into living your powerful truth. And sometimes living that powerful truth comes from a place of, gosh, I don't fit the mold. And you wonder how you're ever going to fit into that box that the world's told you you've got to step into. Ever feel that way? I know I did. Because, you know, it really sucks. And it doesn't matter if you're gay or you're not gay enough or you're too gay. Maybe you're not man enough or woman enough. You just, no matter what, you can't seem to find your place to say, ah, I fit in. Well, that's all about to change because, you see, my guest, Jolene Emery, she's a mother of a son and she's been doing a lot of LGBTQ advocate work. She really tries to help us sort out some of these closet stories, and especially when you start to hear the story of her son. I'm not going to give it away because I want her to really start to tell that story. But some of these closet stories that she's sharing on her own podcast, which we'll talk about as well, which is the Closet Stories podcast, you're going to see that, man, who we are and how to become content in who we are in our own way, well, it just really doesn't matter whether you're gay or not gay enough. You just got to be you. And with that, I'm going to bring my guest onto the podcast. Welcome, Jolene.
Thank you, Rick. That was a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And I'm so excited because we connected a couple of months ago and you were just starting to like put the final touches on your podcast. I know you've got a book out. We'll talk some about that as well.
Yep.
And just, you really came into this because not only because of your son, but you started feeling like I'm going to be an ally well before you had this beautiful child of yours, correct?
I did. And you know, it was in the late 80s, early 90s. My picture is deceiving. I'm a lot older than I would let the world know.
Now, you didn't have to share that. Because just let everybody know. I mean, I'm the same way. I'm like, oh no, I'm not really bald. There's hair there. You just can't see it.
That's right. But, you know, I was in residential life and I was surrounded by lots of wonderful people who, you know, I grew up in a really small town and I don't even think I had a gay friend that I knew about until I got to college. And it was eye-opening for me that homogeneous, non-diverse, you know, lifestyle that I grew up with, just so small, you know, and the world is so big. And so I started right then and there, when my eyes were open to possibility and difference and uniqueness and all of my friends that, you know, made my life so great.
But, you know, it's interesting because I think you're bringing up something that I'm not sure a lot of people that may listen to this podcast, except those that are in their 40s, 50s, so on, they may not realize that we're talking late 80s.
Yep.
We're not even talking a full 30 years ago.
No.
That somebody could actually say, yeah, you know, I don't think I had a gay friend.
No.
Or at least not one that we knew of, because, I mean, while it doesn't seem that long ago, I mean, you have to kind of put it in perspective. I mean, we're talking, this was when Oprah was just getting going. And
right.
You know, Ellen DeGeneres hadn't even done her famous Ellen show yet.
And right.
So it was such a different world, yet when you look at it in the microscope, yeah, it wasn't that much different than what it is today as far as overall cultural, but it's like people hearing this are going, I can't imagine.
Right.
I didn't have a gay friend.
You know? Right. Right.
But as you started to step into that, and, you know, I can relate to the small town stuff. I mean, I grew up in small Colorado farming community.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, you know, middle school, going into high school. Then high school, I went to a very small church high school in Arkansas. Again, very small community.
Mm-hmm.
So things were really different in those times. It was
totally
different. So you started to get exposed to this, and then what started to happen for you?
Well, I got exposed and I was tasked with doing a workshop, doing a diversity workshop on the floor that I lived in my dorm. I was the resident advisor, so it was my job to, you know, put on programs for the women on my floor.
Yep.
And so I decided to host an event called Lesbians in the Lounge. And it was a Q&A, and we called it our very special gay day, Lesbians in the Lounge. Right. And I had coordinated with, you know, the Women's Studies Center and had a handful of really wonderful women come and have this Q&A with the women from my floor. And we had this open dialogue, and really, there were not a whole lot of questions that were off limits. And it was fun and funny and comfortable and normal. And I just felt like at that particular evening, I had a huge moment of clarity, you know, that we're not all that different, right? Yes. No matter how we are born or what our preferences are, we still have a whole lot in common. And I also was really, really sad at how much the world had hurt these newfound friends of mine. Again, in my teeny tiny little bubble, I had no idea the kind of homophobia that they experienced daily. And so I became an ally and an advocate, and kind of a mouthy one at that. And so, you know, and then when my son came out, it was kind of like the world is perfect in that, of course, I have a gay son, you know,
of course
I do. Right. I am the perfect person to have a gay child because he's perfect just the way he was made. And I will fight forever with that particular knowledge, because I know it to be true. I mean, now he's not a perfect person.
I know.
Too many video games, but the way that he was made was perfect.
You know, it is interesting how as you get older, and I'm not talking you have to be, you know, like the 30 somethings that Jolene and I are to get this.
Exactly.
Okay? But it's interesting as you get older, you can go back and you can look at pieces of the puzzle that start to fit together and why you were doing the thing you were doing so that you could be prepared for the thing that you were next going to do. I mean, ironically, you and I have something in common. I was an RA as well in my dorms at college. And I remember the very first, so I didn't become an RA till my junior year. I remember the first meeting I held when all the new guys were moving in, and sitting in the room in the central lounge on our floor and just looking around, and I knew hands down the two guys that I was like, I think these are my boys.
Yeah.
You know, and at the time I wasn't out. I mean, I had come out. So it was 3 years post coming out to my parents the first time. Then I'd gone back in the closet and I'd been dating girls. And, you know, I was actually, when I became an RA, I was on the track of, I'm just going through school. I'm not doing anything else. I'm not dating anybody. I'm just heads down getting this done. It was so interesting now to look back at that moment. In fact, as I was writing my book, it's not in the book, but I remember reflecting on that moment of seeing those guys and going, I've got my hands full here, and how am I going to do this? You know, and of course, one of the things as a resident assistant, at least in my dorm, was once, I don't remember, it's been so long ago, once a month or once every 2 weeks, you had to be like the dorm RA for the entire dorm and walk every floor and do all this stuff.
Yeah, make rounds, Rick,
make
right?
Make your rounds.
Make your rounds.
Yeah, as if you were the bad sheriff, you know.
Right.
They could smell you coming a mile away, even though you could smell their pot burning a mile away, too.
Exactly. So,
but I remember getting to know, like, my boys on every floor that I'm like, okay, I got to watch out for these guys. These are my guys. Even though, quote, Rick wasn't gay, I knew there was this affinity, and it's just so interesting that when I finally stepped into my true truth and said, okay, I can no longer do this, I remember the fear of being the guy sitting in one of those lounges, just shaking like a leaf, going, nobody can find this out, nobody can find this out yet. And the moment that I was getting ready to come out to my wife, I was like an amalgamation of all those guys in the dorm.
You know,
it was so scary. And part of it that was scary, which kind of alludes to part of why you're where you're at and doing the podcast, was the stereotypes. Oh, this is what gay is supposed to be. This is how gay is.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I I just didn't really fit into that mold. And that's kind of where your story continues, right?
Exactly. So my son, if I could just describe him,
no,
Jack.
You can't describe him. We don't describe people on the show. So.
Well, okay, if I can be a rule breaker, he is.
No, you break all the rules you want. Heck, if I can say fuck, you can say that, then I'm going to break the rules. You know, cause, so there, I just did it. I just made this an explicit show, which really it's probably not going to be. But
I love it when they make the little E by them.
That means I do too. It's like it's really good. Then.
They're the real ones.
And those are the ones that get the most downloads. Like, okay, let's all pretend that we didn't know this was explicit and go, oh, that's actually the reason I downloaded this one. So.
So Jackson, if you were to look at him across a crowded room of teenagers, mm-hmm. he looks like a air quote ordinary teenager.
Right.
He has broad shoulders and a strong jaw. He's got muscles for days. He's self-conscious. He isn't the best dresser. He's kind of messy. He's an exceptional student and an even better athlete. He plays hockey. He is kind and funny, and he holds his cards pretty close. So it's really hard to get a read on Jack. Until you kind of get into his inner circle, and then when he feels safe, he'll let you in. So my son, you know, at that time was posting things on Facebook and being the most amazing ally to the GLBTQ community. And Rick, I sat back and I was like, oh my God, I am the best mom ever. Look at my kid. Look at my kid standing up for other people. Haven't I done such an amazing job? You know, because he looks the part to the rest of us as a straight kid. He doesn't have any of those stereotypical predefined characteristics that make the rest of us comfortable. There's no box you can check for Jack. Mm-hmm. And so when he came out, I gotta tell you, I was shocked. I was absolutely stunned. I didn't see it coming. And you know, those people where, you know, a person comes out and then everyone else is like, yeah, okay, we were just kind of waiting, you know, which is, I think, pretty disrespectful anyway, because everyone has their own process and it's unkind, I believe, to say, oh yeah, we knew it. You know, I think that sure. that takes away from a person's experience. But with Jack, I was shocked. And there lies the quandary, really, because at 14 years old, he was too gay to be straight
yeah.
and too straight to be gay. And so his social circles got very still and his world became very quiet and he didn't fit. He didn't fit in either group.
So take us into that a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for people to really, I mean, I get it, mm-hmm. you know, to some degree, because I feel like as a gay man at this point,
mm-hmm.
I kind of fit that mold where I'm too gay to be straight, but mm-hmm. too, you know, it just, there's a piece of me that fits that. And
right.
And a lot of people are pretty surprised when they first meet me and hang out with me, except I don't really hide it. You know,
right.
I'm pretty much like the open book.
Right.
I mean, I don't walk in the room and go, holla, we're here, let's go, you know, but right. I'm kind of like, okay, we're going to have some fun. And by the way, I'm gay. So we're
yeah.
done with that. Okay. Got it. Okay, mm-hmm. good. Let's move on. So for him, what did it really, and for you too, but
yeah.
you know, too gay to be straight. Describe yep. a little bit of that.
So Jack, you know, hockey player, muscular, masculine, nothing about him is soft or feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And so children of that age disassociated themselves with him because he was gay
mm-hmm.
and he just had just even the title of being gay, right?
Right?
Even though there were no, you know, outward mannerisms or characteristics, but just that he even identified as gay made his friends kind of repel and not really want to have anything to do with him. And then the gay boys that were out, and I'm saying boys because, you know, 14, 15 years old, they had more characteristics that the rest of us are comfortable with, you know, more of those stereotypes where the rest of us can go, oh, okay, that child over there, okay, he's gay. I'm comfortable. I can put a label on that person. Well, Jack didn't really fit there either. You know, he has his own perhaps internal homophobia of some kind. That's just not the kind of person he is. And so he didn't necessarily want to associate in that camp either. So he was really a man without a country. And I had parents, you know, and every time I tell this part, you know, I get choked up a little bit because I can't believe that it happened, but you know, it did. I had parents call and ask if their sons could hang out with Jack privately, like either at my house or at their house, just somewhere out of sight so that the rest of the community wouldn't know that they had spent time with Jack. And it hurt so much, and it still hurts.
Oh, yeah.
Because on the other side of that, you know, is my child who, you know, and it's like Jack and I talk about this a lot. It's like he didn't ask to be gay.
Right.
It was chosen for him. It's the way that he was made divinely, and it's perfect. But then there's another part of that too, that is, even if he would have chose it, even if, it's up to the rest of us to support that. So either by nature, by nurture, by choice, or by chance, that is who Jack is. And it's up to the rest of us to support him. And that's probably where I get a little preachy or soapboxy or ill tolerant, because I remember coming up, in my understanding, back in the early 90s when we talked a lot about tolerance. Do you remember that?
Yep, yep, yep.
Like, all I want you to do is tolerate me for being gay. Well, I am so frustrated with that. And I'm so marginally angry about that, because I don't want you to, you know, tolerate my child. I want you to accept him, you know, like accept him and everyone else that's like him, because, you know, this conversation about, is it natural? Is it not? Do we support it? Do we not? Do we have equality? Do we not? It's ridiculous, and it's old, and it's tired. And I'm a parent who's really sick of it.
Yeah. Well, and you brought up some points here that not only as a parent, you know, are you sick of it? I'm sick of it as a gay man and
right.
as a parent too, because what we sometimes can't put our finger on is we may say it's a gay thing or a lesbian, bisexual, transgender thing, but this happens so frequently in so many other realms. I mean, I've got my own daughters that are now 20, going to be 21, and one 17 at this point. And my 17-year-old has been labeled as the freak, the, you know, the extremist, the feminist. I mean, she's being labeled by her, well, thank goodness, no longer friends, as an extreme feminist. And I'm like, okay, but that's who she is. That's,
right.
She's chosen to build her belief system about who she is, how she sees the world. And I realize we need labels. It's funny. It must be, you know, we must be in the zone of podcasts, because there's a lot of them. We've been talking about these labels and how the labels just help us kind of discern things. But once we get them discerned, it doesn't necessarily mean that this is what those people have to live by or how they have to act just to make us comfortable.
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, I feel for your son, because I know in the gay community, until you really find your way in the gay community, how old is he now?
He's 17, almost 18.
Okay, so he's about to go through that piece too, where as he goes into college and on into that world, there's going to be a whole nother segment of, okay, you're muscular, athletic, blah, 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 and you're gay. So, okay, well, oh, you belong over here with the muscle guys, or you know, all this. And it's like, can we just... He happens to be a good-looking, muscular, athletic guy who happens to be gay. Can we just go with that? Is that okay, folks?
Right.
You know, I mean, I remember the first reaction I ever had to somebody calling me a bear, and I just about slugged it. Well, almost slugged him. He was my boyfriend at the time.
Right.
And I'm like, what do you mean? You know, and I was new to the whole lingo at that
point. Sure.
I'm like, okay, you know, hold on. What does that mean? You know, and then as I got to learn it, then I went through my own homophobia with this. I've talked about it a couple of times on the show about, to me, a bear was just somebody who was, you know, big, heavyweight, overweight guy. And I'm like, I'm not that. I'm just a big guy. And yes, I realized they were furry and all that stuff, but it's just so sad yet necessary. I get the necessary piece that these labels are how we can function as humans. It's the only way we seem to be able to function. And yet,
well, and it's in the parenting role too. It's helping helping someone extract that, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Like, okay, let's extract all of that stuff. And let's just start with, you know, who you are and what brings you peace, what makes you happy, where do you find joy, who are you and what are you about, you know, and Jack and I talk about that a lot. I talk about it with all of my children, and this conversation is a reminder to me that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you have more than one child, so I'm sure you can identify that my kids kind of, you know, I go through this mill where I'm most worried about one, yep. and then something happens and then I'm the most worried about another
one. Just
about
the time you're, you know? Like, okay, yeah. done with this one, cool, I can right. sit back and have that martini. Oh, wait, no martini, right. gotta go deal with right. this one, exactly. and then it's like, oh, I need a whole freaking pitcher of martinis now.
Exactly. So I'm just reminded that I talk to Jack about that a lot, but I need to remember to have conversations with the others about it as well. But yeah. Jack, you know, we strip all of that away. And the great thing that has happened is that I found inspiration for the book that I'm completing. And we have another book that lots of friends have suggested that we write. And that book is about the relationship between gay men and their mom. Mm-hmm. Because I have a lot to say about that. And, you know, so does Jack. But the thing that we found was that at 14 years old in southern Minnesota, Jack really felt alone. And I looked and we looked and we searched and we tried together to find community, and we couldn't find it. So we tried to build it. We even tried a meetup group for parents and their gay teenagers. And we had a very low response, couple of friends for life. But, you know, we were looking more for, like, you know, hanging out and talking and, you know, figuring this all out. And how do you do this in a small town? And it didn't really ever materialize for us. Yep. And then we moved to Minneapolis, and we did that. Not so much that I felt like I was running away from a small town, but more that we had to go to a place where Jack was supported and we had resources. And because I was really, really afraid. I was so afraid. This is fear. This is being a parent who, you know, held her son while watching, you know, what happened in Laramie. You know, like, all of that was a part of it. And I didn't want anyone to hurt him, you know. And So I did my research and I found the school in Minneapolis that had a GLBTQ organization and had it for like 27 years. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay, that's the school. that's where you're going to go. And that's where we're going to move. And that's what we did. And so,
you know what? What frustrates me about those kind of things, I mean, there's several things, but what mm-hmm. you just said is, it's frustrating that we have to go find that bubble that we feel yep. good about.
Yep.
And then people go, and I'll be the first to say this, because I've said it and uttered the words numerous times. I will utter the words probably numerous times before I'm dead. There's a difference about living in a gay bubble and then living gay life outside of a gay bubble.
Right.
And I hate that that's the truth. And I don't mm-hmm. live, I don't live in a gay bubble. I live in suburbia. I happen to live in an area where there is a concentration of gay people in our city, where my husband mm-hmm. and I used to live in that little neck of the woods, but we don't now. And mm-hmm. I see the advantages of having those bubbles, but I also see how much it can hold us back from a community perspective of being able to, yeah, I'm going to say it, infiltrate the world and say, we're just like you. So get right. over it, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I remember when we moved into this neighborhood, when we bought this house, it was like, okay, we are truly in suburbia at this point. We're in an older neighborhood, well, well-established neighborhood. And most of the people who were living here were the original owners of the homes that they're in. The one right next to us is a rental. But everybody else around us has been here for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And most of them have raised their kids, and their kids have now moved on. And suddenly here we are, the token homosexuals on the block. And I didn't think twice about it until right. suddenly, you know, we started hanging out with some of them. And then, yeah, we were like the token gays on the block. But mm-hmm. we were very lucky that they embraced us. You know, it could have gone a totally different way.
Oh,
but
yeah.
just to know that I even had to have that thought was mm-hmm. a sad state. And even in today, you know, you and I were talking before we went on the air about this work is so far from done.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've launched your podcast and mm-hmm. we have similar things we're doing with our podcast, and you've had the same reaction from people that I had.
Yeah.
It's like, do we really have to have these conversations anymore? Yes.
Yes, we
yes,
do.
Yes, yes, yes. Just look at our current political, you know, state that we're going through headed towards the presidential elections. I'm sorry, I can't turn on the evening news without some form of some candidate saying something about gays and lesbians. It's just right. It's just insane for me. So,
well, and it's insane, and it hurts our children who hear that. And that's sometimes how I feel, like so many folks are so far removed from how their words land, land on developing people. Like our developing young people is where that lands. And it's hurtful. And I'm just ashamed, you know, I'm ashamed, guilt by association of some of the things that people say. And that's what I mean too about tolerance and acceptance. Mm-hmm. You know, the tolerance is so 1990s and I don't want to talk about that anymore. I want us to talk about acceptance. And then maybe someday after we get to acceptance, then maybe we can dial down our judgment a bit. Yeah. Only one time really has Jack had profound homophobia, you know, slapped in his face. And he handled it with such maturity. I mean, he handled it better than I did. I mean, my mama bear instincts came out and I kind of went nutso. But, you know, someone suggested to him via Facebook that he should kill himself because he's gay. And Jack was articulate and smart. You know, I was more like a street fighter, you know, yeah. like I was not nearly as cool as Jack was. But, you know, Facebook is a blessing and a curse, as is all social media. But so it happened on social media. But then the next thing that happened was that I really didn't have to do a whole lot to this awful, hateful person. Our community took care of him for us. And that sense of belonging and that sense of protection and that sense of acceptance finally happened for Jack. And it happened in words, you know, which we both kept and we both looked at on more than one occasion. And even though it was awful and hateful, what happened next was like riding a bike. Like it was pivotal. It was something that I'm sure he and I will both always remember.
And what was that?
The way that everyone came to Jack's defense and the way that they took this bully out. I mean, we had parents calling the school and we had, you know, people writing to senators about, you know, bullying on Facebook. And we had people making donations in Jack's name. And I mean, it was just, it was unbelievable. And what started for me at that point too, was I started writing a couple of articles on how all this felt to parent someone, you know, going through this. And it's like, I've never wanted to steal this from Jack. You know, this is his experience. But my parallel experience is, you know, watching someone whom I love with all of my heart, you know, face an ugly and cruel world sometimes. And I wrote an article on my children and how my daughter has blue eyes and long blonde hair. And the rest of us are all very dark, dark hair, dark eyes. And so her whole life, people have asked me, where did she come from? And, you know, did I mess around with the milkman?
Right, you know, all those things, right?
Yeah, all kinds of personal questions. Like, of course, I totally had an affair and there's the result. But, you know, she is from the same genetic code as her brothers, but she just looks different. And we often talk about how these blue eyes of hers are such a gift and how, you know, she didn't choose them. They were chosen for her. And isn't she lucky that she's so different and unique? And I wrote an article about Jack's gayness and how it's exactly the same. It's unique to him and it was chosen for him. And I can't ever, no one can, you know, you can't hurt people for things that they have no control over. And then every time I say that, Rick, too, I feel bad because it's like, but even if they did choose it, you still can't hurt them. Right. You know, you can't hurt them. And that's why the Closet Stories podcast has been such an incredible piece of work for myself, and Jack's involved too. And there are people who need to hear our stories, our coming out stories, and being on the inside, being on the outside, what that journey was like, what it felt like, because, you know, I often use the Tuskegee Airmen experiences as my story for why to do this. Because if you were to ask 10 Americans about what that was, I would bet that maybe one would know what that is, right? And in our collective history, that wasn't that long ago. And so if we don't talk about these coming out stories and the things that happen, it's like we either don't know that they happen, we forget that they happen, we're uncomfortable that they happened, we can't believe that they happened, whatever. But they happen, just like Tuskegee happened. Yes. And so we need to keep that in our collective consciousness so that we stop that.
It's so important. It's so very important to just
realize
that these things have not happened that far in the past of our history.
No.
I mean, even if you think back to, without getting on a political stump here and going
right
for it, to know that one of the presidential candidates is being compared to Hitler, you have to sit and think that wasn't that long ago.
Exactly.
We're in the throes of many expansions and contractions of our planet and consciousness and everything. And I think sometimes to put it in the perspective of, but that's not that long ago, no differently than you and I being RAs and doing
exactly
this stuff. It may seem like, oh my gosh, but it really isn't when you put it under the microscope of how few years that really was in the grander scheme of, you know, human existence. So.
Well, I think it's cultural too. I mean, don't we as Americans kind of get picked on a little bit that we think 10 years is a long time
right,
when other countries, you know, 100 years isn't even that long.
Right. It's not even a drop in the bucket.
Exactly. We are an impatient lot.
So a couple of things before we wrap it up. So I want to make sure people know that podcast is Closet Stories Podcast, right?
Yes.
That's the website, closetstoriespodcast.com.
Correct.
And the Twitter handle for it is @yourclosetstory. So those of you who'd like to get another dose of another coming out beautiful podcast, there's two of us now on the front out there doing it. And I'm so glad that I can call her colleague and comrade, and we can swap guests and we can do all sorts of really cool stuff. So
me too, Rick. Thank you.
And one of the things I always do right before we wrap up the show is ask, as a person who is either gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, an ally, if you could give a piece of advice to anybody out there, what would you love to leave the listeners with?
Well, I think I'd like to talk to allies. Mm-hmm. And to allies, I would say, you know, there is a difference between saying that you support difference and you stand up for difference or you stand up for equality. Being a silent ally doesn't really get us where we need to be. We need to be vocal allies, and we can do it in a way that is comfortable for each and every one of us. So I would never suggest that you go and blaze trails where you're not comfortable, but I would say that you push yourself in ways that you might not have tried before. Because for me, being an ally and an advocate has meant so much more to my family and to my community, because I put my behaviors and my actions where my words are. And that's the only thing that has made me feel fulfilled and truly complete as an ally.
I love that piece you brought up about being comfortable blazing trails where you feel comfortable. I think that applies to all of us as humans, but as you begin to step through these closet doors as an LGBT person or an ally, to realize where you're comfortable is where you can have the most impact.
Absolutely.
You don't have to be an advocate standing on a street
corner. No.
You can be a quiet, here, I just heard a podcast and this might help you. You know, it can be any of those sort of things. I just want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast with me, Jolene, and I'm wishing you all the best as yours continues to take off and find its footing. I can't wait to share some more stuff with you as we work together in this realm. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And, you know, considering blazing trails, I want to kind of put it out there in a different way this time, folks. You know, often I say, you know, if you really like us and love us, you know, go give us a rating and review, but that could be one of the ways you could best blaze a trail as an ally, is to do a rating review on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you're listening to this, because that helps the trail get blazed. That helps podcasts like mine and Jolene begin to really become part of the forefront. And it also helps somebody somewhere may be yearning to hear something that they can't hold a book in their hand, or they can't be sitting on a website, but something they could do would be have a podcast downloaded, or be sitting somewhere listening to a podcast that they could easily just delete off their phone or their iPad or whatever it may be. So if you could do that for us, we would greatly appreciate it. And without doing a whole lot of promotion today, I think I'm going to just wrap the show. You know what I always say. I love every one of you to just go out there and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach and the host of the Coming Out Lounge. Thanks for being here with us, and we'll catch you next week. So stay tuned.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.